What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Tutai, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented music composer who has created music for over 700 commercials and promos, including work for major marketers such as McDonald's, Mercedes-Benz, Pepsi, and Nike. He has also written a book titled The 30-30 Career, Making 30 Grand in 30 Seconds, Producing Music for Commercials. Please welcome award-winning music producer, composer, and author, Wendell Haynes. What's happening, Wendell?
Hey, what's up, Spud? How you doing?
Oh, pretty good, man. Welcome to my show, bro.
thank you. Glad to be here.
Man, you have so many credits in the business, man, as a jingle writer and music producer and composer, man. I mean, it's just phenomenal, the work that you've done. I really don't think the audience really knows of all the commercials and things that I know. If they've seen it, they can put their hand. I was like, oh yeah, that's you, man. Especially the Heineken commercial. I know you from that personally. So
yeah.
That's a big one, man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people ask me all the time, well, have I heard your work? You know, because I tell them I'm a composer or a musician or whatever. And have I heard your work? And chances are everybody has heard something I've done at some point, because I do a lot of commercials, a ton of commercials, and I really, really enjoy the process. So it's not the same thing as doing records, you know, nonstop, where you know a Timbaland record or a Pharrell, Neptune's record or something like that. You don't necessarily get the notoriety off the top like that. But as a composer, your music kind of works at the subconscious level, and you're there to push and encourage a certain message that's coming across in the picture or on the radio commercial. You're trying to push a message. So it's not, you don't get all the high credits, no one's shouting you out at the Grammys or anything like that, but you do get all the other great credits and accolades and the like, all the things that come with doing a lot of productive work.
Right. No, I totally agree with you, man. You know, being a producer myself, and you know, you can probably vouch with me on this, man. I mean, 20, 30 years ago, the producers were behind the scenes, you know, a lot of time, unless you were a person like me and really read album credits. I mean, you really didn't know who was really producing the albums unless you really searched out for it, just because we didn't have a lot of camera time and, you know, interview time back in those days.
Right. But the Puffies, you know, the Diddy's changed that. The Diddy's got in and started getting in the video, which I'm all for Diddy. I love Diddy.
Right.
I'm all for it. But once Diddy started getting in the videos, it became a producer spotlight, you know?
Right.
Now Swiss Beats is in the video. Now Timbaland's in the video. Pharrell was bigger and had a bigger presence than the actual artist he was producing in the video.
Right.
You know, so it's interesting how the world has changed. And a lot of it has to do with the internet, you know, and how fast we all consume things these days.
Definitely. You know, Wendell, how did you start in the business, man, as a full-time composer or a producer, man? What was that major project that really put you in that position where this is going to be a full-time gig for you?
The way I did it, I the first spot I ever did was a Certs commercial. And the way I got in position to do a Certs commercial was, I was an editor with Spike Lee's company, and I, on a whim, I took the lead that a friend told me. He said, go in and speak to this commercial editor. She might be able to hook you up. And so I spoke to her for about 20 minutes, showed her a couple things that I had done, and in 20 minutes, she made one phone call to a commercial editing company called Vito DeSero Editing, and set an interview up with me the week after. I had that interview, and that company hired me as an editor and as a music guy. And once I got in the door and got my first opportunity to work on some music, the editor loved it. He put the music up against a film for Certs. And as we know, Certs is that breath mint candy.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, everyone went crazy. Who did that music? Oh, it's the guy in the back. You know, no one knew me at the time. Oh, it's
right.
The guy in the back. Well, is that music available? Oh, absolutely, it's available. Oh, we want to buy it. Boom. They bought it for like $30,000. And then you saw that commercial on TV every day. It played all the time. And we know with commercials, just like records, you get residuals. So every time that commercial plays, you get paid for your work. And that commercial led to a host of other search commercials, and that's what we call an advertising campaign, when they start to link more than one spot together.
Yeah.
And once you become the composer for multiple spots, you become a composer for that campaign. So I ended up becoming a composer for that campaign, which then led into what we all know now as Dentyne Ice, right?
Oh, yeah.
That gum, Dentyne Ice. Dentyne Ice was not even out at the time. I was the first person to do a Dentyne Ice commercial. So they used me as the guinea pig to create music that would then become the theme, which would eventually become the theme for Dentyne Ice, which, just like Certs, that commercial led into a campaign of spots. So wow. Once I became the Certs Dentyne Ice gum guy, it just all spiraled from there, because the great thing about it was that I was able to impress people in a mainstream market. We're not talking about being pigeonholed to the urban basketball, football, hip-hop tracks.
Right.
You know, can you make us a hip-hop beat? This was, can you make some great music that is now for the mainstream audience that would play on mainstream TV, national television, the Super Bowl, the Grammys, you know, these big-time programs, which means when you have music that plays on big-time stations, big-time networks, and for national audiences, that means the money for those spots are that much higher as well. So you become a go-to guy for very big commercial spots. And that's how I was able to build my reputation very fast.
Now, let's back up a little bit, Wendell. Give me some details, man, on how the licensing and the buyouts of your composition works in for commercial. I mean, I know there's certain instances where, you know, you get paid for the license of them using your song, and sometimes they may even just buy it out, the rights, you know, for the whole entire track. I mean, how does that work for a composer?
Yeah, it depends. There's a few different ways it happens. Sometimes a company can come to you and say, we love the music that you created for this piece of music, and here's our budget, and they tell you a specific number. That number could be anything. I've had budgets that have gone from $200 to $125,000 for one piece of music.
Wow.
It all depends on what their budget is, what they're using that piece of music for, how many different spots that piece of music is linked to. So it's all about usage. Sometimes they want to license a piece of music that you already have created from. They might have seen it in, if you've heard of a stock library or a track that you've already created for something else. And they say, hey, Wendell or Spud, do you have a track that sounds like something that's a cross between country and hip-hop? Or something that's acoustic sound, acoustic guitar blended with orchestral strings? Do you have anything like that? And if you've been doing music for a long time, you generally have an arsenal of music that fits every category.
Right.
if you're a versatile composer, or someone who has been around the industry long enough to get so many requests that you have just stockpiled a lot of music over the years. And so fortunately, we've been in that position, and I have a company called Volition Sound Branding, and my company has stockpiled lots and lots of music, and so we kind of cover the territory of licensing music as well as creating original music. So with licensing music, what you really want to do is find out what their budget is, and offer them the music for whatever price they ask you for, because once you start to get a little too picky with the amount of money you want for your track, all they have to do is say, okay, we'll go to somebody else, and somebody else will be more than glad to undercut you for the billing.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So that's probably the difference between records and commercials. You know, it's really, you're in a business where you are there to service other people, where if I'm Kanye West, or if I'm Swiss Beats, people are buying not only my music, but they're buying my reputation. They're buying my brand.
Yeah.
You know, and so they may pay extra for that. You know, they may say, you know what, this brand is only going to work if we can get such and such's name on it. If we can get Kanye West to put his name on a Heineken product, then we can really, really do well. But they're not going to say, wow, if we can get Wendell Haynes to put his name on this product, it's going to do. They're not going to do that.
Right.
So we're talking about two different levels of artistry, two different reasons why people might buy the music. And so what I would say to people who are trying to license their music, if you're not Kanye West, then don't act like Kanye West, right?
Right.
Which means don't stick people up for $50,000 for your track. If the people want it for $2,000, take the $2,000. Take the $2,000 and go. You know why? Because chances are you're not placing that much music every year anyway, in terms of a record. And what happens when you do it, when you go and try to get a record out? Well, for most people, unless you're Teddy Riley or some of these people who've got their names out there, for most people, you're not placing a record every month. You're not placing a record every 6 months. You're not placing a record every year. You might get a placement every now and then, but what are people going to do these days? They're still going to try to lowball you for the amount of money they want. And they might not give you your credit. You might not get the money you want, and you might not get your name on the record. Or you might not get your publishing. You know, there might be three areas you're looking for: money, publishing, and credit, and name credit. You might get one of them, you might get two of them, you might get all three of them, but chances are you might not get any of them, or you might just get one.
Right.
You pick which one it is, you know? So yeah. What I'm saying is, I think the reason that people in my industry do so much work is because we don't negotiate our way out of the deals. You know, if all they have in their budget is $500 for something that's not going to go on air, it's just going to be for the internet, or it's going to be for, you know, some type of internal use, then give them the track for $500. If they have $20,000 or $30,000, you know, don't negotiate for $35,000.
Right.
Take the $30,000. Take the $20,000. You know, don't negotiate yourself out of the deal. You know, it's not worth it. And again, you're there to provide a service, and you know, you want to be respected, and generally people who are working with you want to respect you, and they will respect you with the amount of money. And if they don't have the amount of money you think you deserve on it, usually they will say, oh, well, we don't have as much in the budget right now, but we do have this, can you do it? And again, if you say no, be prepared for the dude next to you to say yes.
Right.
Which means you don't even get the $2,000 that you just turned down. And don't tell me that everybody cannot use $2,000. I don't care if it's to buy your child new shoes, or to pay your rent,
right?
Or to take your girl out for Valentine's Day.
That's right.
That's still $2,000.
Exactly.
You know?
You know, being a composer, Wendell, man, I got to ask you, man, it's, you know, we have such a diverse background as composers versus sometimes record producers, man. I mean, who were a lot of your musical influences? Has kind of paved that way for you as a composer, where you started really developing your own style and also branching off into other styles where it's unrecognizable to your own signature style that you're used to doing.
Let's see. Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Great. Great all the way.
Yeah.
Hans Zimmer was a huge influence in terms of the orchestral music.
Oh yeah.
Quincy Jones, of course, early on, mostly for his work on Roots, and The Wiz, and some of, you know, the stuff that's more of the scores, and,
sure.
And I loved his albums coming up, different albums, and admired his musicianship. And I like listening to a lot of odd composers now, composers and producers, people who do interesting things with textures. Like, in my opinion, as we grow as composers, we have to find new inspirations, always keep listening for more music and find new ways of being inspired. And so you have to find new people who inspire you. So for me, you know, along the way in the last 10 years, I've been even more inspired by Kanye West,
okay.
You know, the people like, in groups like 07, who I love their textures, you know what I mean? Even some of the groups from the 90s, like the Portisheads, who were doing really, really cool stuff with hip-hop beats but in samples, and just great textures and moods, like very, very cool moods. You know, as composers, you want to be inspired on so many different levels. You want to be inspired for all different settings in your day. So, you know, in the morning, you might be in a loungy mood. You know, when it's noon, like 12 o'clock, you might be hyped up, you might be getting into your rhythm, you might want to hear some Jay-Z, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Later in the day, you might be something else. You know, you might go through four or five different moods in the day. And that's basically what you are asked to do as composers. You're asked to sit behind your computer and in an instant turn into a certain mood, create a mood for this image that you see on film. All of a sudden, it's not like a record where you might have a whole year to come up with an album or a whole 6 months to come up with your first single. You know,
right.
These people need a quick turnaround, so you have to be quickly inspired to create a mood and come up with these great, great tones and timbres and textures.
Definitely.
You know, and personality. So it's a great challenge, and it can be very fun, very inspiring, and you just have to stay on top of it and always stay inspired.
Definitely. You know, to keep us inspired and bringing out those tones, man, I want to talk about the transitions and the sounds and keyboards that we're using. You know, you and I come from an analog background, man, where we're using a lot of external keyboards like the Motifs, the Tritons, and, you know, I can go back as, you know, the DSS-1s and the Emaxes and the D50s and, you know, some of those retro boards out there. And, you know, now we're in the DAW world of recording. We have virtual instruments. I mean, what's in the arsenal now, man, that you're working on your compositions? Are you using a combination of both, or are we strictly in the box now with the sounds?
And to tell you the truth, I am not a equipment head, and I'm not the type of person that goes out and buys the next great thing every month. So, but I can tell you exactly what I'm working with. I'm working with Pro Tools 10. I'm working with a lot of software, you know, like some East West instruments. I'm working with Melodyne, that kind of stuff. I'm working with the with live instruments as well. I got guitars in my place. You know, I grew up playing the trumpet for years and years and years, you know.
Yeah.
Pull that out sparingly. I work on my I have a Triton. I have a Roland Phantom. I have a, let's see, I even have an Akai, one of those old Akai samplers. I think it's the 960 or something like that.
Okay.
I have the MPC 2500. You know, yeah. I have Logic.
Okay.
It all depends on what is necessary at the time.
Sure.
I run Reason sometimes. Sometimes I don't even do I don't run the Quantize on my music when I'm in Pro Tools. You know, I just like to do freeform.
Sure.
You know, higher.
Right.
I don't use a ton of plugins, you know?
Yeah.
Are we getting a little feedback?
Oh, no, I hear you. Do you hear me clear?
Okay. I don't use a ton of plugins, but I have a ton of plugins side to the mixer. So if I'm doing a record, like, for instance, I just got finished working with an artist named Darnay. I generally record everything pretty flat and even. And then when I get it to the mixers, I allow them to do all the tricks, you know?
Sure.
I do believe in delegating work so that one person, it doesn't have to do everything. And I believe that that's really one of the strong keys to being successful is having a good team around you that is able to take on specific skill sets at certain times. That also allows you to do a lot more projects. You know, if you have a lot of work coming at you, you don't want to spend so much time on one thing because you'll never get to the next thing. So in order to be prolific, you kind of have to have your team in place. It's kind of like a factory. You got to look at it as a factory, except keep it very personalized. You know, sometimes a factory can be cookie cutter, which means you're not really putting your heart and soul into the project. I still try to put the heart and soul into everything. I just try to do it very efficiently because we're working on deadlines. And when you're working on deadlines, you have to meet those deadlines.
Right. Now, as far as your compositions, man, I mean, how has it changed for you when you're working on a commercial or movie score versus an artist? I mean, how has the tracking your composition arrangements changed?
I tell you, that's a good question. Well, for instance, if I'm doing records or, well, let's just keep it at records. Let's say, for the most part, if I'm doing records, I start off with the drums. Because what's more important than the drums? Nothing. Nothing. You know why the drums are the most important aspect of production? And I don't know if I'm the only one who thinks this, but I tell you, I believe this, and I if anybody goes against me on this, I think they're wrong. All right. The drums are the most important part of the composition because the drums are the only element in music, in my opinion, that constantly get outdated fast. Drums, you could be using the wrong snare. You might have the right kick, but the wrong snare, and your track is already dated. You could be using the wrong kick. Think about it like this. Hip-hop is based on sampling old music, right?
That's right.
Well, the only reason why that track is hot is because they put it over top of new drums.
Exactly.
It's old music over new drums, and so it's hot. That means there is a lot of power in the production of your drums. If you put that same hot sample over some whack UTFO Roxanne drums, your track would be straight whack and would not get on the radio.
Oh, no, I totally agree with you. No, I totally piggyback, and I'm totally vouching for you on that one, Wendell. Having an arsenal of drum library, it's important. I update my drums more so than I do my synths. I mean, because you can really only reinvent the wheel so many times with the synthesizer. You know what I mean? You can only twist the sound so much where it becomes unusable. Your drums, because they're one shot, and you got to have that ear candy behind those drums. I mean, if they're not popping and if they're not slamming hard for a dance track anyways, I mean, you're just not going to get people grooving. And like I said, if they're dated and you're using these old Elises, drum machines are cool in a retro song. I mean, but if I'm hearing every single song, I was like, man, that's an SR-16, dude. That's like 20 years old. You know what I mean? Let's start using some of these sample libraries. If you're not developing and making your own drums up, there's tons of libraries online that can help you out, give you a good base to start off from to build that library up. Now, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, it's there. And you have to stay on top of your production. You have to listen to other music. You know, a lot of people who say, well, I don't listen to the radio. You know, the radio's garbage. You know, you can say that all you want. But at some point, go back and sneak and listen to the radio. If you don't want people to see you listen to the radio, go back in and sneak and listen to it, because you have to stay on top of the latest sounds. You cannot think that you live in your own little shell and this is what you're going to make and that's all that matters. Otherwise, you'll end up being like Prince, who we all love, but we know Prince is making music for himself right now.
Totally.
He's like, look, this is what I'm making, and I don't care if anybody buys it, and I'm putting it out on my own label or whatever, and I'm going to make my money, and that's it, because I'm Prince.
Right.
And that's fine if you're Prince.
Right. I mean, he's only got 100
million
fans.
You've already spent years pleasing everybody else. You've already spent years touring the country. You've made your money. You've made your mark. There's nothing Prince can do right now that's going to make his legacy that much greater. He can make another great song, but he's already great. He's already surpassed everything. He's an icon.
Totally.
So he's done it. But for all the rest of the people who are still trying to make their mark, you got to listen to music. You got to hear what's hot out there. When your little kid or your little brother or little sister is bopping their head in the back seat or next to you to some song that you think is corny, before you call it corny, think about why they're bopping their head to it, you know?
Right.
When the lollipop song was hot, was out by, is it Lil Mama?
That's right.
Yeah, or the chicken soup song was out.
Yeah.
There was something hot about it. Don't tell me that was a wax song. And all these people who talk about, oh, man, I'm glad real music, I'll be glad when real music comes back. You know, I must hear this every year. At some point, somebody says that. Or every 2 years, somebody says, when is real music going to come back? Oh, here comes real music. Everybody's definition of real music is different. And if you are the type of person that makes great music and you like it, then roll with that. That's real music to you. Everyone's definition is different. You know, don't tell me that real music is only the music that's played with live instruments, because I've heard a lot of garbage live instrument stuff.
Right.
You know, I've heard a lot of garbage live instrument stuff. And all this great music that the Rihannas are doing, the Lady Gagas are doing, the Beyoncés are doing, you know, this is great music. Yes, it's played on keyboards and synthesizers, and it's programmed, and it's got the computer stuff, and I know you got the auto-tune, and people talking about real vocals and real singing. Well, you know what? Sound goes in cycles, okay? So if sound goes in cycles, we've already done it. We've already sung without auto-tune for years. So now why can't auto-tune have its little time to be a nice, different texture, you know?
Right.
Hip-hop should not be dogging out auto-tune. Because why? Hip-hop is based on always doing something new. going, some, taking the craft to the next level. You know what I mean? Okay, right. People said the hip-hop would be gone after the first 5 years when it came out. But hip-hop is sustained because it always does something different. If you ask me, there was a whole bunch of people who said Down South is ruining hip-hop. No, Down South took hip-hop to another level. You know, it made it a whole nother thing. Down South gave birth to all sorts of other types of music, you know? Down South is something that should be embraced, okay? Now, maybe Down South might start to run its course at some point, and now then becomes another type of music. I see dubstep starting to come into the fold. You know, Jay-Z and Kanye had a big hit with the Ball So Hard song, right?
Right.
That's dubstep.
That's right.
That's because hip-hop said, you know what, now we're going to do something else, you know? And the thing is, hip-hop is so great because it can survive. It's so creative.
It is.
And it constantly reinvents itself.
Right.
So you need the haters to keep reinventing.
Yeah.
And you need the people who are supporting the music in order to keep reinventing. Because you need that push-pull that makes you continue to challenge yourself. So when me and you sit down in the labs, bud, and we say we're going to make a hit record today, we got to hear the haters behind us. And we got to hear the people who we know are going to love our stuff. We got to be encouraged and challenged at the same time in order for us to come out with the best product.
Right.
You know? So,
no, that's
it's interesting, but
it is.
And I welcome the challenge every day I sit in front of my equipment.
It is, man. You know, it's a double-edged sword sometimes, Wonder. You know what I mean? It's like you got to take the good with the bad in this business. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, like you say, man, we can create all day. But again, it's like, man, am I writing this for me or am I writing this for the client or the audience? You know, I have a personal taste in music, but, you know, again, is this going to be radio ready? Is there a format for my music on the radio? You know what I mean? How am I going to fit in with the other tracks that are out there? And that's where a lot of guys got to understand. It's like, well, you can't downplay these other guys because, for one, they're catering to a specific style of music. You know, and I can't compare a pop artist and say, oh, that's not real music. Well, man, you listen to smooth jazz every single day. You know what I mean? So that's, you know, it's apples and oranges. But for this style of music that these guys are doing, they're dominating. They're very successful at it, and there's a market for it, and it's making money. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if that's what you're not into, don't listen to that style of music because, again, it's artist expression. You know, you know what I mean? But again, if real music is what you're looking for, it's out there. You just have to find out what it is you're looking for and listen to that.
You have to understand your definition of real music and then go find it.
Exactly.
Go find it.
You know, promoting yourself as a musician, you know, has changed over the past 10 years, Wendell. You know, what step have you maintained in your campaign that keeps you marketable and keeps you on the radar for upcoming projects?
Right. I would say two things. One, I hired a publicist a little while ago, and the publicist was a great thing to do because what the publicist does is they walk around every day or get on their computer every day and talk about you. So they keep people aware of you, aware of your talents, and they keep you on the tip of the tongue. So when people have projects, they can say, oh, you know what, I heard about this guy, or you know what, wow, this guy is really good. And what I find is if you get the right type of publicity, whether it's in a magazine or online, in the paper, on the radio, all these mediums allow you to combine that with either your resume or your website, which hosts your reel. So in addition to seeing your work on a website, they can also read about the progress that you have made as a composer or as a company head or figurehead. And that kind of backs people up. You know, I mean, that kind of gives people more assurance.
Yeah.
You know how these days when people are going to look for a job, employers tend to Google your name now. Yeah, you send them your resume, but they actually Google your name.
Oh, yeah.
For whatever reason, you know, maybe they're just nosy. Oh, let's see what Spud is.
Hey,
you know,
man, it's public record these days, dude. The internet is public record. I'm sorry. So it's available. We're going to look for you.
Yeah. And that's one of the things. So when you have a publicist or when you're in articles or you do interviews, people start to know more about you. That's always good. But I also find that the biggest way to expand your reputation fast is to do great work. Yeah. Never leave any stones unturned. If somebody asks you for a piece of music, hey, Spud, do you do Puerto Rican banjo music, you know, mixed with slide guitar and pick your choice, techno?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Absolutely, I do that. You know, I did a couple pieces like that last week.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, when you've been in the business this long, you probably have done pieces like that. But what you want to assure people of is that you can do it. You're willing to do it. You're happy to do it. And you can do a great job at it. And so you go ahead and you turn that project in. You make sure it's great. And you win. And you impress them. And then you get the next call. Hey, okay, that was great. You know what? Hey, Wendell. Hey, Spud. This time, can you do sophisticated, classical, urban electronica music? Sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
And you jump in, and you put your same heart and soul into that, and you come up with a great product. You know, one of the things as a musician or composer that is very essential for people in my business and probably people in all realms of business, you know, and it just depends on whether you want to pursue this or not. But what I was going to say is it's very important not to get stereotyped by your clients.
Right.
You don't want a client that's going to say, oh, well, he only does hip hop, or he only does electronica, or he only does country. You know, if you get into a situation where they think you only do one thing, then they will only call you for that one thing. It's okay if they think that you are great at that one thing. Hey, Spud can really make some hot dance tracks. You know, he's great at dance.
Yeah.
It's okay if they think if they think you are great at a specific type of music. As long as they know that, hey, not only can you do that great dance track, but you can do this little love ballad too.
Sure.
Or you can do this classical piano track. You can recreate a Mendelssohn piece. You can recreate some Beethoven. You can score a documentary on child vaccines.
Right.
You know, the documentary you score doesn't have to be on hip hop. You know, it doesn't have to be on rock music.
Right.
You know, I might play the rock guitar. I might play guitar, but I'm not just a guitar guy. I can sit down and play the piano. Or, you know what, I can do this, I can do that. You want to show them that you can do different types of music.
Definitely.
You want to show them all the things that you can play and create and deliver a great product to. You don't want to spread yourself so thin that you think you can do it, but you really can't. And all of a sudden, you're turning in a piece of music that does not fit the quality that it should.
Sure.
You know, all of us understand that, hey, we know what... We might not like country music, and I'm not saying you personally, but I'm just giving an example. You know, you might not like country, but you know a nicely well-produced country track. You might not like it, but you can tell if it's a great track. You can tell if it was really produced really well.
Right.
Versus a track that might have been done in somebody's, you know, garage, and it's a poorly produced track.
Right.
You know? And so I always tell people, if you can recognize a piece of great music as a composer, you should be able to make a great piece of music, you know? Because what are we doing? We're mimicking great art. We're mimicking things that have been done before. If someone asks you to do anything classical, you're always going to be mimicking something that's already been done. Why? Because orchestral music has been around for years and years and years. You know what I mean? So
you're
trying to reach the standard that has already been set. Same thing with hip-hop. The standard is going to be whatever is on the radio. Same thing with pop music. When a client in my business asks you to make a piece of music, to make a pop dance track, they might say, hey, can you make a Rihanna joint? Can you make one of those Rihanna umbrella songs? And what are they going to do? They're not composers or musicians necessarily, but what they're going to do is listen to your piece of music and see if it has the same quality of production as Rihanna's track. And Rihanna may have spent 6 months on that song. You have one night to reach the same quality of production that Rihanna and however many people worked on that track. Six different people working on that track, tweaking, compressing, EQing, mastering. But you got to reach that in one night. That's the challenge of the commercial business. It's the challenge of the TV and film business. You have to compete with the big time celebrities who are making music every day that is being played on the radio every day, because that's what they usually call the standard.
Sure.
Because it's the hit record. It's the hit. You want the hit. You need to make all of your music sound like the standard, whatever that standard is.
Right.
If it's Hans Zimmer, it needs to sound like Hans Zimmer. You know, if it's Timbaland, you need to make the Timbaland joint.
Right.
But it's got to be legit.
Man, that's, couldn't have said it better myself, bro. So what's on the musical agenda for 2012, Wendell?
2012? Yeah. Well, let's see. I produced an album for a girl named Darnay. She's hot. She's got some really tight music that's coming out. So that's a great entry into the record industry this year. That'll be coming out shortly. Working on two different documentary films right now. One is called Girl in the Ring, and the other one was Furious Force of Rhymes, which is really cool, about hip-hop across the world. And working on some more books. You know, I have four books right now called The 30-30 Career.
Yes,
and
do.
Some of those books are on people who want to get into voiceover. You know, if you have a great voice and you want to speak on commercials, or you want to speak on TV show promos, or films, movie trailers, got a book on voiceovers. I have another book on singing. So if you have a great voice and you want to sing on commercials or TV spots, this is a great book for you. And then I have another book called Becoming a Platinum Composer coming out, which is all about how to go from basically the college level to creating a career in making music for commercials, TVs, and movies alike. So
nice.
Those are some very exciting things. I also have the 30-30 Career website that's about to launch in a couple of months, which is going to allow people to break into this music industry and start to get some placements in some commercials and get their reputation out there as a great source for music, you know, on the internet and in these TV shows and films. Because we know now that there's more than one revenue stream for music. It's not just get the platinum record.
Yeah.
You know, and I always like for people to know that, you know, call yourself a composer. Because if you call yourself a composer, you know, well, one, you have to transform yourself into the mindset of a composer. But if you call yourself a composer, you automatically open up more lanes for yourself. You know,
you do.
People say they're a producer. If you just say you're a producer, people say you think you just make records.
Right.
And so you don't want to just be pigeonholed into records. You want to be able to do everything. So you can be a composer-producer. You could be a producer-composer. You could be a couple of different things. But make sure that you always keep yourself in position to bring opportunity to you. You know, you don't ever want to limit the lanes that you can occupy. You want to continue to create more paths to revenue for yourself, more paths to whatever your creative freedom may be, you know?
Definitely.
So that's what you should do.
Well, Wendell, it's been a pure pleasure having you on my show, man. So much valuable information. See the work that you've been putting in, man. I would love to have you back and talk about your new endeavors, your new website launch, anything you got on fire, man. You got to come back, bro.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, Spud. Loved it. It was great talking to you.
Good deal, man. You have a safe 2012, man, and the best of luck to you.
Same to you, my man.
All right, take it easy.
Peace. And a big shout out to Wendell Haynes for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. It was real cool talking to Wendell, man. He's a really diverse musician. He's got his ear to the streets, and he's really doing well for himself, producing commercials and jingles and promos and branching out to other venues in the music industry.
For more information on Wendell, you can hit his website up at volitionsound.com, VolitionSound.com, volitionsound.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spudtootight.com. www.spudtootight.com. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.